The primary election is almost here. Vote centers will be open May 7th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Make your vote count. Visit vote.indy.gov for more information. This message was paid for by the Marion County Election Board.
This morning on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy. Yeah. Previously on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
All right, number two here. Who holds the all-time mark for most NBA games played without a playoff appearance? Is it Tom Van Arsdale? Is it Dick Van Arsdale? Popeye Jones? I also ran into Popeye Jones at the pub one time.
Hey, Popeye the Sailor Man!
After. I remember Popeye Jones played for us, I think, during some playoff runs. So I'll say B, one of the Van Arsdales.
Tom or Dick?
Dick.
All of a sudden, now I get a rise out of it.
You sure you want to go with Dick?
That's what she said.
Mark is so happy.
I mean,
right now.
Tom.
Kevin is giving me loads of audio.
I think they got another brother named Harry.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
Don't eat meat, but you sure like the bone.
Boy, hell of a way to start a Friday.
That was great.
That was the pop quiz yesterday. We've got kind of a wild run here on the pop quiz this week. Some great success early in the week. And yesterday, yeah, shout out to the twins, Tom and Dick in Arsdale. They were on the Buddy Hield-centric question to the pop quiz. Buddy Hield, the fourth longest run of a playoff drought, 632, I think it was, 632 games in his NBA career, and that will end with Sixers-Knicks. Where are you going that one? Is that a true coin
Boy,
flip?
I tell you, that's the series just because the teams, the cities, they hate each other. If you know, the Sixers limp into the postseason and beat the Knicks, who are all bombastic, and they're the two seed, and they're for real, and they're ready to do things even without, you know, Julius Randle, doesn't matter. I think I'm going to go Knicks in like a seven-game series. Maybe it goes six, but yeah, I think it's basically a coin flip. By the way, you mentioned that was a great rejoin, Mark. You mentioned the pop quiz. I am looking at today's. We'll do it in the 9 o'clock hour. There is a 1950s baseball, and there's a Boston Marathon question, an 1800s Boston Marathon question. So good
what
luck.
In the world, did Scotty good not luck. Sleep last night?
I have no idea what Scotty does when he leaves here.
Now we're not in a position to do this, but I guess we're allowed to do it. But who would you rather play if you're the Pacers? Because that's your next round opponent. If you do beat the Bucks, would you rather play the Knicks or you rather play the Sixers?
Boy, that's a difficult one.
And is that stupid to bring up before game one even starts?
Probably. Yes, because the Pacers, you know, haven't exactly been winning.
10 years since they've won a playoff series.
It's been a decade. You know, I was 29 years old when that happened. You were in your mid-20s the last time they won a playoff series. You know, I have said that I've been worried about the Knicks because defensively, I feel like they have more defensively. On the other side, you know, Embiid burns everybody, but Embiid has really burned the Pacers. I mean, he's taken the Pacers to the woodshed a couple different times.
I think, again, they've won every game since Embiid's been back, but, you know, if that series were to go six or seven, just can Embiid really do this? Like, can he be healthy and the MVP? I mean, when he's healthy, he outside of Jokic, he's the best player in the NBA, and I don't think there's really any argument.
I would rather have the Sixers simply because I don't feel like they have a single defender or a single guy that could guard Haliburton as well as the Knicks could probably guard Tyrese Haliburton.
Yeah, certainly Ananobi would be the one to get that assignment. Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, and honestly, we've probably wasted too many minutes on it just because the Pacers have got their business to take care of. Again, as we talked about to lead off the show, as we wake up on this Friday morning, the Pacers are not only favored in game one, they're favored in the series. And Andy, I think that is because of the news that we heard yesterday from Shams Charania, and that is there is some serious doubt on Giannis Antetokounmpo playing in this series. Not just game one, series, period.
Yeah, if you remember, you know, he and Woj had kind of different reports. Initially, you know, Shams said, is it Shams or Shams, by the way? I want to say
it's
it
Shams.
Right. I thought it was
really?
Shams as well. I said Shams, I thought it was right. Then you said Shams, and I'm sitting here like, we got to get this right. Shams had the conversation 3 days ago that there was serious doubt for game one. And then if you remember, I think it was on Wednesday, Woj came through with, you know, hey, there is doubt not only about the early parts of this series, but they just kind of hope to get him back in the later parts of the series. Now, this is via Stadium on his podcast last night, though. This, I haven't seen this really be clipped very much. It was only a minute in what was an hour-long podcast, but here's Shams last night talking about the injury to Giannis.
Giannis's status is still in doubt to start this first round series this weekend against the Pacers. And he's been rehabbing daily with that strained calf, getting treatment. He has had even some stationary workouts on the court, but he is doubtful to start this series. I'm told this injury could be anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks, potentially. And we know his superhuman ability, but that clearly puts his status for this series in jeopardy. And the Bucks, Giannis, they also have to have some level of caution and being careful with this calf injury. Already this season, Giannis has had Achilles tendonitis, a hamstring injury as well, and now this calf strain about a week ago. And the last thing the Bucks, Giannis would want is for him to get back, rush on the floor with a calf injury not being 100%, and then potentially tweaking that or leading to even worse injuries. So the stakes are high for the Bucks right now. They had championship aspirations going into the season. The moment they got Damian Lillard, they had championship aspirations right near the end of the regular season. But the stakes could be even potentially higher for a guy like Giannis, who to me clearly is arguably one of the faces of this league.
Okay, so what do you make of that? There is still,
if I'm a Bucks fan, I want to cry.
Well, yeah, there's still some hedging there. Like, it's not just a blanket report, right? He's out 2 weeks. This injury is 2 to 4 weeks. Now, if he just missed the 2 weeks, if you remember, he was injured on April 9th against Boston. So if you take that out 2 weeks, that would be next week. That would be, what, the 23rd. That would be a Tuesday. That would be the night of game two. So if it goes 2 weeks, you still can't imagine he would play game two, just A, coming off the injury, and B, he would not have practiced or really done anything at that point. And then if you extrapolate that out, obviously, if it goes a third week or whatever, he would miss the entire series. Does that sound change anything the way that you've been thinking couple days?
I
agree with you.
I've always been in the camp of he's not playing game one and game two. I think I said that to you Monday or Tuesday. I mean, very early in the week, I thought it was pretty clear he would not play again Sunday, Tuesday. That's what we're looking at, game one and game two. Now, game three is not till Friday, a week from tonight. So my thought was, all right, what does that additional time do for Giannis? But hearing that, let's just call it 3 weeks. Let's split it in half. 3 weeks, you're to game five. Again, game three is a week from tonight. Game four is a week from Sunday. And once you get through game four, you'll go every other night. So it'll be a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday would be games 5, 6, and 7 if this series indeed goes that far. So week three would be the night of game five. So, I mean, you're at that point, he's missed over half the series.
Yeah.
If it goes seven games.
To me, it's like, what does the series look like on a thought of even bringing him back at that point?
Exactly. So that's where, if you're a Bucks fan and you hear that, it just sounds awful. And, I'll go back to what I said early in the show. Okay, Damian Lillard, Chris Middleton. That's a great number two and three, if you want to label them as that, next to Giannis, theoretically on paper. If you've watched the Bucks this season, those dudes have looked like, again, they're walking up hole 15, 16, 17 at times. They don't look like the spry all-stars and whatever, great USA players and, great playoff performers. Middleton's had some huge games in his playoff history. We've seen Lillard, do it with a Portland supporting cast that looks like nothing like he's had or other teams have tried to build around their star. So I understand why the Pacers are favored. I mean, after hearing that clip right there. So again, it's a golden opportunity for Indiana, especially Sunday, because I just look at it and think to myself, as soon as you get that first win over Milwaukee, now that timetable and just the general pressure, it skyrockets. And there's already a lot of pressure on Milwaukee, unquestionably. But as soon as you do that, you ratchet up the pressure, and you brought up, what does a compromised Giannis look like? That, to me, could be the difference in the series. If you take Giannis and him at whatever, 100% becomes him at 85%, and he's trying to gut it out, so instead of the 42 points he averaged against you during the regular season, if that becomes 31, And now all of a sudden he's not living at the foul line. He's not getting Turner in foul trouble. He's not making Siakam work as much on the defensive end of the floor. That can be the difference in a series that you'd probably even say, if Giannis is healthy, is a coin flip. All you need is just a little difference that can make the overall difference in this series. So, yeah, I mean, to me, I've literally debated all morning long. Assuming Giannis is out for the first four games, I'll say Pacers in five, maybe six.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think the Pacers win this in five. I think the Bucks, they just smell of a team that, I don't want to say wants to collapse, but they feel like
they're
a team,
on the ropes. And now it's the Pacers' job to make sure they deliver those blows.
Think about this. How many other teams are like that in the NBA playoffs? I don't think there's another team. I mean, there are teams, you know, the 76ers had a down year, but they could beat the Knicks, and they're in the play-in because Embiid missed 40-some-odd games. Like, they have the ultimate excuse. Who else goes into the... You can make, well, you know, the Kings, but the Kings have their young stars. The Kings had a great year last year. This year, they're in the play-in situation. But if they make the playoffs and are good in a series, they're not in this sort of hyperventilating mood. That's the mood. The Bucks are sitting there saying, if we don't do this, this, and that... You know, there's a chance they can blow things up. Then it goes back to not only the health of Giannis, but if they bring Giannis back this series and they still lose, that is a different feeling, I would imagine, for that franchise than losing to the Pacers in the first round and not having Giannis. So that's all sorts of interesting. One thing you mentioned is exactly where I was going to go when I was going to tease. Giannis is great. We understand that. He is a freight train. He gets going downhill. He's going to go in. He's going to dunk on somebody. He's going to grab rebounds. But the thing that matters about him, it's like the Zach Edey comparison for a second, is Giannis gets fouled so damn much.
Sure.
And he creates so many opportunities at the line. And you saw that in some of the games, the five games this year. If you remember, he had a game, he shot 32 free throws.
Was that the 60?
He was 24 of 32. He also had a game, the first game against the Pacers this season, he was 16 of 18. He had a game where he was 11 of 13, 8 of 11, and 8 of 13. This guy gets to the line. He gets easy points at the line. Plus, what you mentioned, if he gets to the line, you know, let's say he was playing, he gets to the line 15 times in game one, those fouls are coming from guys like Miles Turner and Pascal Siakam.
Well, and
that's
where
they're coming from.
And again, does it lessen Siakam on the other end of the floor? Is all of a sudden Siakam, you know, kind of sucking wind a little bit here, and he can't be the, hey, let's throw it to Siakam and go get us a bucket? Because, you know, I think individually, assuming Giannis is off the floor, Siakam and Turner have got to thoroughly outplay Bobby Portis and Brook Lopez. That's a matchup that you cannot have a split. You cannot have certainly Milwaukee be the better in that matchup. And again, Portis and Lopez are fine players. Mm-hmm. I don't want to act like they're just scum, but your Siakam and Turner duo, they have got to be, frankly, they've got to be what I saw on Sunday. I mean, Sunday they were outstanding in clinching that game 82. I know we've talked so much about Halliburton. Obviously, we've talked a ton about Giannis and Lillard and Middleton and all of that, but I point right there to that front court. Of what Portis and Lopez have done to the Pacers, Turner and Siakam need to be huge.
You already know Portis is going to have a game or two where he balls out, and he gets the crowd into it, and he gets his eyes popping, and yeah, he gets doing what he does.
He's got
right?
a little bad boy,
yeah.
too.
Oh, yeah. Has he signed two back-to-back one-year deals with the Bucks? I can't
Sounds
remember.
Right.
But I know he's on a one. Like, he's on a free agent deal after this season.
And
he was a teammate of Tyrese
Halliburton's with Team USA, so there's a little bit on that. And again, Chris Ballard going to meet the media coming up here at noon, pre-draft presser. Anything in particular you would like to hear a true serum Chris Ballard on as we obviously are 6 days away from the start of the draft, but again,
I know
the first time Ballard has spoken about the offseason as a whole outside of the owners' meetings.
No, the biggest problem is, don't you know exactly what he's going to say about bringing back his own guys? That you know the warts of your own guys. You
Will
don't
he open
know
up a little
the
bit?
Other guys.
Will he open up a little bit about the pursuit of Danielle Hunter and
he
all
could.
Of a sudden that flipping from, I mean, a Hunter swing would have been massive.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of that, they went the exact opposite with team run it back. You know, why? I mean, there's a lot of different moves that fall between handing Danielle Hunter the contract Houston did and then opting to go, let's bring back the exact same starting group on the defensive side of the ball.
He could say something if he's asking, and maybe you're the one. I mean, you know, he's asked about corners. You know, you could say, well, you know, does he feel, if he says he feels good about his room and then he goes out there and, you know, number 15 overall, he takes a corner. Does he really feel good about that room? I don't mean this in any bad way. I kind of feel like Ballard today, we're going to get the least amount of info that we've got from Ballard the last several times he's spoken publicly.
Which is pretty normal for this press conference. But again, there are some non-draft related questions that I think can be asked, deserve to be asked, and we'll see how he answers them.
All right, coming up on the other end, Bally's Chris Denari. Now, is he working out now or is he working out later? He said he was...
He's not working at all. He's been doing yard work. He said, I could take the day off.
So he's got a new fire pit.
He's been carrying stones and sand and pebbles and everything else and mulch around his house. Okay, so we'll talk with him about that. What does he think is going to happen in round one, Pacers-Bucks? We'll find out. Chris Denari joins us next. Wake up call, 93.5-107.5 The Fan.
I'm going to guess our next guest had this song playing as he built a new fire pit outside. Nothing says a week off from basketball like, let's go fire pit. And honestly, look at the weather tonight. This could be the perfect fire pit night for one Chris Denari before he and many others in the Pacers traveling party head up to Milwaukee for game one, 7 o'clock on Sunday night. Chris Denari, Coach Denari, do I have that right? Did you get a little... Hootie, get a little Darius Rucker going while you were making the fire pit?
I have, and the other thing is Sunday when I was driving to Gainbridge Fieldhouse for a must-win game to stay out of the play-in, I put on Cracked Rear View, which is where that song came from 30 years ago, and was definitely getting motivated for that telecast last Sunday listening to the little Hootie. So you're absolutely right, KB.
I'm showing Andy Sweeney the pictures now.
Hey, show me that again.
This looks beautiful. You know, some people would outsource this work.
Not you.
Not Chris Denari.
So Chris,
blue-collar gold swagger right here with the fire.
Did you know how to do that, or did you have somebody help you, or YouTube, or what?
No, Terry Denari, my wife of almost 40 years, and I did this.
Wow.
We had an idea. I mean, I like to do stuff around the house and take care of the property, and we just had an area off our patio. We have a fire pit, but it's more towards sort of the woods, so we don't use it that much. And we just thought, okay, the dogs like to hang out with us, and we just thought this would be, you know, something cool to do. And so we went to Greenstone in Noblesville. They were very helpful in sort of telling us, you know, what we need to do. We picked out the flagstone. We had, the other day, we had 4 tons of flagstone delivered to our house. We had 2.5 tons of limestone, crushed limestone delivered. And, you know, the beauty of this time, I mean, I've had time, of course, to prep. I've gone to practice, but I've tried to take advantage of this opportunity. And we've worked pretty hard, and It looks great, and you know, we still have a lot of work to do on it, but and that will be in and around what I've got going on for the next hopefully you know, few weeks. So, but it's been a lot of fun. We've enjoyed doing it, and I think we'll enjoy it even more when it's done and when we can sit there and have a nice beverage and enjoy it.
Picturing T.J. McConnell with a wheelbarrow in the backyard, Chris Denari telling him, no, over there. Yeah.
Well, maybe someone further
maybe
down
Jairus
the
Walker
I was about to
work.
Say, maybe someone who's not going to play as much.
James Johnson could lift a lot of that limestone, right?
It's funny, in southern Indiana, Chris, so me and my wife, if we stayed there, like, we were stuck. It's like, I wanted to make a big fire pit area like you had, but I just could not do it. And, you know, it's very expensive. If you go get, you know, a contractor to go do it, it's very, very pricey. And so the house we moved to here in Irving, it's got a great patio with a great fire pit. And tonight's going to be a fire pit Friday, Chris. There's absolutely no doubt about it.
I mean, the great thing about our house is this is our third house in Carmel, and it is the house that you would find in Irvington or Broad Ripple or whatever. It's a 1930s craftsman. And so, we love it. I mean, we've got the cool front porch. In fact, You know, when we have our grandson Archer over, he likes to just sit on the porch, sit on the swing, and we watch cars go up and down the street. And it's just one of the favorite things he likes to do. So I think he'll like being out here too. Like I said, once we get it done, it's been fun to do. I mean, it's a lot of work, but you know, that's why I do CrossFit. That's why I told Mark, I said, I am taking CrossFit off today because of what.
Same with us.
Yeah, same.
What I've done the last few days hauling these flagstones.
Yeah, same with us.
See, I mean, us and Denari are the same. We're not doing CrossFit today.
Correct, right.
We may enjoy a fire pit, and we're talking Pacers basketball on a Friday. How
Literally.
About that?
Yeah, and I think that's probably where the similarities stop. TV voice of the Pacers, Chris Denari, is with us here. Chris, just logistically, you guys will be doing, we know, the first four games. Is that correct? But we're unsure of 5, 6, 7?
Yeah, what I saw, if there's a game 7, that was a TNT, so we'd be able to do that. Basically, we can do any game that is not on ABC.
Got
it. If it's on TNT or ESPN, we're allowed to go side by side. So, for sure, we have the first four games. 7 o'clock is tip time, Indy time on Sunday. So, JJ and Eddie Gill will have a pregame show at 6:30. So we'll do it just like we do during the regular season, half-hour pregame, half-hour postgame, and the game in between.
Chris Denari joining us, 18th year TV play-by-play there. Bally's following the Indiana Pacers. You know, I'll just ask you this before we get into Chris, some of the nuts and bolts of this series. Obviously, the Giannis injury and maybe perhaps the Dame injury kind of looming over what's going to happen here. But I'm just wondering for you, you know, you're covering a winning team, a playoff team, a team favored in the first game and first round of the playoffs. And as we know, that hasn't always been the case. How is being the voice and following this team while they've actually been winning been different for you in your job? And I guess what stood out to you with this team, given that they have been winning and, you know, you followed so many teams that haven't been in playoff contention, obviously?
Yeah, I think, you know, just being in out and about, you know, people engage you about the team. They enjoy watching, whether they're at Gainbridge Fieldhouse or watching the games on television. You're at the gas station and somebody pulls up and goes, how about those Pacers? And, you know, that makes you feel really good. And I think it's a tribute to what Kevin Pritchard and his staff, what Rick Carlisle and the players have done. And you've seen that in the Fieldhouse. I mean, the vibe in the building has been, you know, so much better than it was, you know, the last number of years. And I think it started with the trade to acquire Tyrese Halliburton. And then ultimately you get a player like Pascal Siakam who wants to play with Tyrese and Miles Turner. So, yeah, it gives you a lot of energy. There's no question about that. I mean, I try to approach my job, as you said, I've done it 18 years. I think it's 10 years they've been in the playoffs, 8 years they have not been in the playoffs. And you need to approach it each and every game the same way because you owe it to the people that are watching. But there's no question when your team is better, when it's winning, when it's going to the playoffs, it gives you a little more bounce in your step and a lot more excited for what lies ahead.
Again, he is Chris Denari coming up 7 o'clock, and then Tuesday a little bit later. That is an 8:30 tip for Game 2. Those are the two games in Milwaukee before they get back here a week from tonight for Game 3 inside of Gainbridge Fieldhouse. I don't know, Wild, maybe you have been in the backyard and thought about this, or when you've gotten in the office and done a little homework. Most interesting nugget, number you have found related to the Bucks and the Pacers. I don't know if it's something maybe different they've done under Doc Rivers, but what is something that really stands out to you that you want to get in that broadcast coming up on Sunday?
Well, I think we all know that playoff games tend to slow down a little bit or a lot of bit, but I don't think it has to slow down for the Pacers. I think they want to play at the same pace that they've played during the regular season, even though these games are a little bit different. But I'll go back, you know, I think they have shot the ball very well against Milwaukee. Milwaukee has struggled defending the Pacers. And when I think about it, these games weren't just like regular season games. You had the in-season tournament semifinal game in Vegas that, Indiana rallied from a significant deficit in the second half to win. Then they had to play those back-to-back games on January 1st and January 3rd in Milwaukee and then at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, and that was after ball gate, if you will, and all those kinds of things, and how well Indiana played offensively and how they moved the ball and how the bench came in and played well. So I think it's all those things that have to be strong. I think, you know, rebounding and taking care of the basketball, especially on the road, will be very important. Limit your turnovers. Don't give Milwaukee chances to score, you know, points off turnovers. And you can get in trouble in games if you give up second chance points. And that comes down to doing a good job on the glass. And I've always said this, guys, you don't have to necessarily win the boards, but you don't want to get beat by 8, 10, 12, 14 rebounds, because usually that means you're giving up offensive rebounds, and those lead to second chance points. So I think those are two of the areas that you really have to focus on, especially in the postseason.
Chris Denary joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. It's the Fan on a Friday. Why do you think, Chris, the moment won't be too big for this young team trying to do something many of them have not done?
Well, I think the in-season tournament experience is very helpful, because those were games that were played on a big stage. They were very meaningful in the fact that you were playing for a trophy, you're playing for something. And so I think that will help. I think you also have some guys that, while they haven't necessarily had big roles in the playoffs, they've been there. It's funny, I was at Barry Collier's retirement ceremony celebration last night, the athletic director at Butler, who I worked with for many years, and Brad Stevens was in town, and we had a great conversation. He loves Aaron Nesmith, and, you know, said, hey, that was a tough guy to give up. And we talked about the playoffs, and he said, hey, while Aaron didn't have a huge role with the Celtics a few years ago, he still understands what it's like to play in the postseason. Pascal Siakam has won at the highest level. He's won an NBA title. Miles Turner has played in the postseason. T.J. McConnell, Doug McDermott. Even though Tyrese Haliburton and a number of other players haven't, I think they've been on a pretty good stage this year that I think will help them as the week unfolds.
Where do you put, and I get playoff atmospheres are different than regular season atmospheres, Chris, but where would you put Pfizer Forum in terms of loud NBA venues?
Well, you know, I've not been there for a playoff game, but I've definitely watched on television and watched them a few years ago when they won the NBA title. And, you know, they have the area outside similar to what the Pacers have now in Bicentennial Unity Plaza, and it looked pretty impressive. So, you know, it's a big building. They're very supportive of their team. So I would anticipate that atmosphere will be very strong. I would assume that they'll try to lift their team up, knowing that, you know, they may have an issue with Giannis. We don't know about Damian Lillard. They will try to pick that group up. You know, Bobby Portis is a really good player and an emotional player. I'm sure they will try to do a lot of things to make sure that they're in position to win. And we'll just have to wait and see how the series plays out and you know, what the Giannis availability is and what all the injury availabilities are. But I think if you're the Pacers, you can't worry about that. You've got to go play your game and just focus on what you can do. And I think if they do that, they'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see if the Pacers can jump on Milwaukee at all. Do you start to see that crowd get a little restless, though? You know, I certainly hear you out on lift them up, but seems like just a little bit of turmoil brewing there in Milwaukee, and obviously that will be one to see play out. Sunday night, 7 o'clock, they will have you on Bally. That will be each of the first four games, and then we'll keep an eye on 5 and 6. As long as those are not ABC games, you'll get Chris Quinn and J.J. Here throughout round one. And will you guys, not to look ahead, but I am, would you be doing the semifinals? I kind of forget how it transpires the rest of the way.
No, the only games that the local broadcasters can do is the first round. So once the first round is over, it all goes national. So this is our opportunity, and you know, people have watched us all year long, and we know people will want to sample ESPN or TNT and see what the national people are saying. But, you know, we're the group that's been with the team all year long. We know the Pacers the best. So hopefully people will tune into Bally Sports Indiana.
1749 on the U-verse for myself. It will be alive and well here coming up Sunday night. Chris Denary, enjoy the fire pit. Safe travels to Milwaukee. Cannot wait for Sunday.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, let's get into it. We do it every day here leading up to the draft around 8:30. Colts on the clock. Mark, let's go. Hit the O.
The Colts are on the clock.
All right, so defensive ends. Yesterday we did the man crush of Kevin Bowen, Dallas Turner, and Dallas Turner most likely not going to be available anywhere around 15. Now, I found it interesting last segment. I don't know, was this ESPN better? Was it DraftKings or FanDuel that they had 9.5 as the over-under for Dallas Turner? Again, Atlanta picks at 8, and many people think Atlanta would go with Dallas Turner, so I don't know if he would fall.
Seems like Atlanta's been like the first defender
right
spot. So, you know, is it Turner? Is it Quinion Mitchell? I mean, I've even seen his name at 8. So, yeah.
Oh, I totally think what we're seeing with the mock drafts, because all of them are so much alike, that what we're seeing is absolute bullcrap and it's going to mean nothing come next Thursday. And what we've talked about and what's kind of, you know, what's kind of shaped our conversation are those mock drafts, that they're going to be way just completely wrong. And Jared Verse could be one of those guys, a guy that I think will be available. And when you talk about an edge rusher, you look at Jared Verse. Now, how is he different? He is a bigger player than someone like Dallas Turner. Jared Verse is about 10 pounds heavier, and he's about an inch and a half taller is Jared Verse out of Florida State. I didn't know this. You know, he was actually not, reading Dane Brugler, he was not a highly rated kid, and he went to Florida State. They gave him an offer. He didn't have many other good offers.
He started at Albany, right?
Yeah, he started at Albany. I mean,
he hit like a
Rutgers and a Syracuse and a Temple offer. I don't need to tell you what those schools are. Not exactly powerhouse college football programs, but he goes there and really over about 2.5-3 years develops into one of the better players in the country and the ACC. I remember watching him against Louisville in that ACC championship game where, if you remember, Florida State was down to like their fifth string quarterback, right? They had like a true freshman.
That was the ugly game.
They won the ACC title without a passing game, without a quarterback, because of that defense and specifically that defensive line. And so, I mean, this is a really good player. I mean, this is a guy the last 3 years, 10.5, 9, and 9 when it gets to sacks, well up over double digit, between 12 and 17 in tackles for loss. So I really like this guy. I happen to think, we'll get to our, you know, scale of 1 to 10. I happen to think Ballard probably doesn't take him. He goes probably to, I think, would be a playoff team is Jared Verse, but I really like Jared Verse. He's maybe not as fast as Dallas Turner, but I just think he is a powerful player.
Well, and that powerful part, I think, is where I get a little bit of Quiddy Pay vibes to it. And I brought up earlier, I think there are some similarities to that draft pick. And honestly, Chris Ballard, if you look at some of the edge rushers, in particular Pay, it's been more of the, can they play on three downs, the power to speed guys. Now, again, if you want to, you know, go like baseball pitches, I would rather have more of a fastball off the edge. Mm-hmm. And again, versus a little bit more of, you know, hit you with the power and then throw some speed at you.
Yeah, this guy's more of a 4-3 than a 3-4. Dallas Turner more of a 3-4.
I just like the quickness, really, off the edge when you look at it like that. But again, there are some things that you like about Verse you just threw out there. You know, his consistency from a production standpoint. I would say one negative on him, and I know we hear this a lot more in the NBA than we do the NFL, but Andy, he's going to turn 24.
He's old this year. No, he's an older player.
He is one of the oldest prospects in the entire draft, especially here. And again, you get some of this. Last year, the Colts drafted a 24-year-old safety in Daniel Scott out of Cal, who tore his ACL in the spring. With the COVID year, you're going to get some of the older prospects in all the drafts, really, right now. I brought up those over-unders earlier in the show on some of the draft prospects. Jared Verse is over-under, according to Vegas.
Can I guess?
Yes.
22.5.
16.
Oh, wow.
16 for the over-under on Jared Verse. And again, the Colts draft at 15.
Yeah. This guy will be available. Like, we've done these, and some of the guys are like, he's not going to be
able. I've seen him a couple times ahead of the Colts, but not many.
Yeah, you would imagine Verse would be there if they wanted him.
Oh, this is not my opinion, but if we're basing this off of the Colts' chances to draft him, I'll go 7.1.
Okay.
Again, I would have it much lower. But there's just a look at him that I think, damn, I mean, when you think power to speed and, you know, you think three downs and you think, you know, consistency, there's some Quiddy Pay vibes that I get off of that. So I think, okay, could Ballard do that again? And again, they have next week. That's a decision on the fifth-year option for Quiddy Pay to pick up. If not, he's in a contract year. So you got to keep that in mind as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to go like something like 6.8. Yeah, I think there is a chance here. Do I think ultimately it happens? No. But when you talk about a guy who's got a lot of production, played in the ACC, again, this is a guy that redshirted. He's 24. He redshirted. Yes, yeah, somebody redshirted that wasn't on Purdue or Virginia's basketball teams. He redshirted with Albany there in 2019. So I'm with you. If they took him, what do you think the reaction would be? What would our reaction be on Friday if we came in here? Because I like Verse. I don't think he's a bad player.
And obviously,
at all.
I've been a huge edge rush guy.
It's not the one you wanted, but it is.
Right.
You know.
And again, I'm getting a little nitpicky here, but to me, it's like that defensive line group, I think, is such a, you want to diversify it when it comes to pass rushing. Because in a given week, that offensive line, they might be really stout in the interior, but they might have tackles that really struggle against speed guys or tackles that really struggle against powerful guys. So again, you want to have the ability, I think, to throw different body types at them because, and you know, obviously this is how the game works, but teams do not switch their offensive linemen every other down. You can switch your defensive linemen every other down. So, you know, that unpredictability, I want to make sure I've got a variety of ingredients among that group. And that's why, again, I'm such an advocate for getting more of that speed, edge rush, really force an opposing offensive tackle to cheat way out there. Because again, that can open up to force Buckner single teams or Dio Dangbo single teams, or, you know, hell, Tyquan Lewis was a really effective rusher for you last season. So, that's where I would probably be just slightly muted on a guy like Verse compared to a guy like Dallas Turner. It wouldn't be the end of the world for me. Again, I like continuing to swing at edge rusher. Just because you've missed there routinely doesn't mean you stop swinging.
Dane Brugler has Verse going 19 to the Rams, and Mel Kiper, his last mock draft, had him going 21 to the Dolphins.
I was going
to
say, do I think he'll be available at 15? Yes. Do I think they take him? No. I would put that at a 5. I think they'll stick with cornerback or something else there. I think they'll let Verse go elsewhere.
A guy that we'll talk about next week, KB, and we were laughing and talking about this off air. Well, I guess we'll probably profile him on Monday before we dive into some of the wide receivers. But this is a name to throw out there. Byron Murphy II is a defensive tackle from Texas who yesterday we had Matt Miller on from ESPN, and Matt Miller was talking glowingly about how much he loves Byron Murphy. We'll talk about him next week. If Jared Verse was there or Byron Murphy, which way would you go? Because, again, Murphy's a defensive tackle. You just signed DeForest Buckner. You just signed Grover Stewart. But when you talk about, you know, big guys on the line of scrimmage, that's something Ballard likes. I'm interested if they have Murphy and Jared Verse there, two big guys on the defensive line. Is Ballard going to be able to say no to both of those guys?
If they take a defensive tackle at 15, they'll be coming for Blue's job.
Oh, goodness. So that's going to be the reaction? Yeah. I mean, I'm mostly with you. That's a guy Ballard's going to take. That's who he's going to take.
I'm not following this at all. Somebody just tweeted this at me. He goes, thought this might be of interest to at JMV, at KBone1070. Tonight's IU Notre Dame men's soccer game. I guess, do they do spring soccer in college? I guess they do. Nothing said, you got to love this if you're an IU soccer player. It's Friday of Little Five, and I've got to go up to Grand Park to play an exhibition soccer match.
Oh, that's terrible.
So much for the soccer house right there on Dunn and 17th Street.
So why is the guy messaging you?
Okay, so he goes, tonight, I don't know, maybe it's a she. Virtual announcer is the name. Tonight, IU Indy men's soccer game, hashtag PA announcer is a human, but is 100% studio recorded and then played through a computer. First collegiate game ever, and it's happening in Westfield.
I'm not following that.
So basically, you've recorded like Tommy Jones subbing into the game.
Okay.
I guess.
Okay. Like when you're like a video game, like the announcers for like Madden every year, you know, they go
right
into a studio.
This is Brendan Gaudin or whoever is the current Madden play by play. So, I mean, I guess when you're the PA announcer, everything is pretty robotic anyways. It's not like you're offering
a
ton of color on it.
Yeah,
but
the first half presented by? Yeah.
But what if, like, something weird happens?
Like if there's like a rain delay or a lightning delay.
What did we have in the IU-Wisconsin game? Yeah. The fire alarm. We thought at one point whoever pulled the fire alarm turned the season around.
What if there's a gruesome injury? You know, yeah. I hate to say it, but yeah, things happen in live sports that you can't predict. That's the beauty of live sports.
Is this AI eliminating human jobs? Should I not be a fan of this?
I think AI is absolutely 1,000% eliminating jobs. But they did say, remember back in the day, you guys remember this, they said that robots were going to start doing every single job. And I feel like robots are doing some jobs. I mean, a robot did, you know, fix your hair at WeGrowHairIndy.com.
That's a great point. I guess I should be grateful for them.
So maybe I was wrong. Maybe the robots are taking everybody's job.
Yeah, you should trust the robots, because next time you go for an evaluation, they'll be like, we heard what you said about the robots, and now the robots are going
to
fight back.
In your live reads, you have said to trust the robot. The robot doesn't make any mistakes.
Pot kettle black right here.
Exactly.
Just don't take our sports industry jobs.
Even microchip Kevin.
Take our medical jobs.
Take those jobs. A robot can't break down Jared Verse for 9 minutes like we just did.
I'm more just thinking how dejected that bus has got to be from Bloomington of those kids that can't take part in Friday night. Well, now that I think about it, what, it's 7 o'clock game? You know, they're gonna get back to Bloomington by 12:30, and that just means they're gonna go to the wee hours of the morning.
Yeah,
we'll go until the sun's rising.
God bless a college kid for having the stamina to play a soccer game, then take a bus ride, get back at 12:30, 1 o'clock, and then go out partying. You said it was an exhibition game at that,
right? Spring soccer, right? Isn't soccer a fall sport?
We're gonna have an AI like sports show at some point.
No, stop it, stop it.
Chris Ballard needs to draft a wide receiver.
9 o'clock hour here, closing out the week. We've talked about it a lot today. The Pacers now favored in this series coming up against the Bucks, as the health of Giannis Antetokounmpo sounds very much up in the air for this series. We'll talk more with Justin Garcia, Bucks radio analyst, coming up to close out the show for the pop quiz. But right now, let's head to the Payless Liquors hotline. You certainly have heard him on these airwaves quite a lot, and I think two kind of different but cool angles to go with here. Was Zach Kiefer from The Athletic. He was not only at the Chuck Strong Gala last Friday and speaking with Andrew Luck, but also his latest up on The Athletic. The stories behind Reggie Miller, the skinny little twig who became one of the best trash talkers ever, an outstanding read. Zach, how did that idea even begin? Because I'm used to you a little bit more national NFL, not dipping your toes back into the local market here.
Yeah, man. I mean, we were thinking of certainly angles we could attack with the Pacers back in the playoffs. I think it's been a 3-year hiatus. And KB, you know, I mean, was there anything better than Indy in the 90s when the Pacers were making runs in the playoffs?
No.
Being a kid in the 90s, I mean, it was the first real like sports sort of explosion we had, at least in our lives. It was the coolest thing in the world. Reggie Miller was as big as there was. This was before Peyton and the Colts really got going. But I had his book laying around, and I started reading it, and it's unbelievable. He wrote this during the 1995 season, and it's essentially just a ton of stories that you would never see today. One, because the player wouldn't write about it, and Twitter would explode. So it was just too much fun. It was too good to pass up on. So dug those up. I mean, this guy went at Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and fans in the front row and celebrity courtside, you know, beyond just Spike Lee. And honestly, I was cracking up writing half of the story.
Zach Kiefer with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. In your story, I love it. You guys embedded the fight between Jordan and Reggie Miller all the way back in February of 1993. The reason I love that is, you know, those are two stars at the very top of their game, Zach. You never see something like that in the NBA anymore. It's usually a role player, not two of the top, you know, 6-7 guys in the entire association.
Exactly. And that's why it was so fun to go back and look at this. And Jordan talked a lot of smack himself, and he backed it up. But what he didn't do was he didn't ever really lose his cool, because everybody came at him. He was the best. But who got under his skin was this skinny little twig from Indiana. And at this point, Reggie wasn't really Reggie yet. He was an up-and-comer guy. But he wasn't, you know, a national name yet. But he's still one of the best trash talkers in the league. And, I mean, you watch the video, he gave Jordan a nice little shove when went past the baseline, and Jordan lost it. I mean, the eyes on Jordan in that moment I mean, the dude wants to go kill him. And Starks' comments a couple years later, actually later that season in the playoffs, he said he wanted to take Reggie's head off. I mean, Reggie had this talent. I always said this growing up, and I was completely biased, but I said, if Reggie played on another team, I would hate him more than any player in the league. But he plays on my team, and God, I love him.
Yeah,
that's perfect.
There were some unbelievable anecdotes throughout the article. Zach, I loved can you give our listeners maybe a little insight into Reggie Miller's email address back in the early days, I would assume, of email?
Yeah, this was back when everyone was on AOL. I don't even know if half the listeners know what that is anymore. So it's not the full email address. But the fact that he started his email address with TT, short for Trash Talker, tells you everything you need to know. I mean, this guy, he embraced who he was. He relished it. He writes in his book that if it was quiet on the road, he just couldn't live. And this funny quote from Mark Monteith, who I'm sure has been on your show before, covered the Pacers intermittently for a long time, including during Reggie's heyday, said that Reggie would sometimes shoot an air ball early in games on the road. And after a while, Mark started to think this was on purpose, because after he shoots an air ball, all the crowd gets on him. They chant, Cheryl, Cheryl, air ball, air ball. And that gets Reggie going. So maybe he's throwing air balls on purpose just to get going. If he is, man, that's some high-class motivation right there.
The other fun one that I enjoyed reading about was, you know, you brought up for a young kid in this market, obviously I mimicked Reggie in the driveway a million times. And, I mean, I would wear the wristbands. I mean, that was 1,000% something I did. Could you share with our audience maybe some money under those wristbands, thanks to a quote from his father, Saul?
Yeah, if you remember the wristbands, they were really long.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, like 6 or 7 inches. I mean, just like egregiously long. You don't see anybody wearing them these days. And the great thing about the Millers was they were all athletes. His dad was in the military, but they had this concrete slab in the back, and that's where they would all talk smack. And so that's how Cheryl got really good. It was because she had two older brothers. And then when Reggie came along, I mean, this kid started in braces. And the doctor said basketball probably wasn't a really good idea. But when he got to play, Cheryl just beat the crap out of him, like physically and on the court. And so the smack talk started with the family. And the dad was at the head of that. And he would talk smack, too. And after a high school game, Reggie didn't really have a great one. They're driving home, and Saul Miller tells his son, you know, you didn't play worth 50 cents tonight. And so even that was sort of smack talk in a way, because for years, under that really long wristband, Reggie Miller would slip 2 quarters. Now, you would never know because the wristband was so long, but he, just all the greats. And when you're as skinny as Reggie was, you got to find a weapon. And he just, the game within the game became his arena, and he brought the fans in. He brought his own father's words in. He found motivation any way he could. And the great part is the book has the best title. He loved being hated by everyone besides Pacers fans.
Zach Kiefer joining us from The Athletic has the piece up on Reggie Miller, the Trash Talk. It's a long read. It's a great read. Get that Athletic subscription. I almost said prescription again. I've done that like 3 times this week. Some great stuff there. Before we dive into the NFL, you know, I find Reggie interesting in two respects. You know, the Pacers have had some downtime here, Zach. As you know, if the Pacers, a good young team, you know, if they can go in, they take care of the Bucks, and they're in that second round, right? You know, I just think it's sometimes a good young team can tie back to some of the older greats, right? And I think that could happen with Reggie and the Pacers if the Pacers continue to ascend here. I think that's one thing. And then the second thing is, you know, Reggie played in an era that was low scoring and physical. And I always think for a guy like Reggie Miller, who can just flat out shoot the basketball, my God, can you imagine if he played in today's game? It'd be unbelievable. His stats would be even greater than they are already.
You know, that's a funny point. I've never really thought about that. When you think about the Bucks and the Pacers right now, to simplify things, I don't think it's a stretch to say the arrow is pointing up on one team at the particular moment, and it's not necessarily pointing up on the other team. I feel like the Bucks are at least a giant question mark right now with coaching and Giannis's injury health. I think it would just revitalize, I mean, the way people feel about the Pacers. I went to a game a couple weeks ago, it was so fun to see people buying into this team. They're young. They've got a new star. They're fun. The next step is doing it right now, late April, early May. That's when the city gets behind the team. And if you're able to beat an established contender, a team that won the title a couple of years ago, that would just amplify 10 times. And if you move into the second part of your question, man, that's fun because there's so many guys. Richard Hamilton, you know, was kind of the first one that mimicked Reggie's game, running all around these screens on the baseline and hitting really tough 20 and 30 footers. I have no idea what he'd do in this day and age, but I will say this, the best shooter of all time, Steph Curry, asked that man who his favorite shooter is.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't his dad. It was Reggie Miller. And that says something because, I mean, if you look at Reggie's form, it's fairly hideous.
No, it's homemade. Yeah.
It is homemade.
Why is it hideous? It's because he had to learn to shoot it over Cheryl's long arms in that driveway. And so that's kind of why he's got the two hands. It goes really high. I mean, you'd never teach a kid to shoot like that, right? But for a long time, he made more threes than anybody in NBA history.
That's a great point, Andy, about the era. I mean, right now, Miles Turner probably averages as many three-point attempts as Reggie Miller did back in the day. And you know, certainly.
Well, it's the same like passing in the NFL. Like any quarterback now can throw for like 4,000 yards, right? Basically. That used to really mean something.
Zach, Brandon was asking what the title of that Reggie book was. Do you know that title?
The title was I Love Being the Enemy.
Well, that is perfect for Reggie Miller. Again, Zach's latest.
I'm telling you, man, if that came out today, Twitter would blow up. Like, it is wild stuff. Yeah. Lots of curse words.
I loved reading your stories. I can only imagine what that book is. All right, shifting gears here. And again, Zach Kiefer, of course, from The Athletic on the Payless Liquors Hotline. You were there last Friday night, as was I, listening to Andrew Luck. Any grand takeaways from, I know you've had some conversations with him since retirement, but anything grand in chatting with him on the record about what he had to say?
I think he's happy. I think he's moved on. I think he's at peace. I was surprised, you know, when I first talked to him a couple of years ago that he wanted to get back involved in football in some capacity. And coaching was what he wanted to do. But it feels like at this point he sees football in a different way. Like all the pain and the word he used to your question was torture, tormented at that night then he walked away. That's kind of in the rearview mirror. And he wants to give back to football because in his mind, football gave him so much. And I almost just want to like grab him at some point and say, do you feel like your career is incomplete? Like, how would you not feel like your career is incomplete? And I don't think he sees it that way. But it's funny, KB, because in a lot of ways he talks like us in that we have two young kids and that kind of runs your life and it runs your schedule. And he's like, I can't make the Indy 500 this year. My wife's traveling and I got to watch the kids. And so now he's in a different world, obviously, but it feels like he's really enjoying being a dad and he's really enjoying coming back to Indy and connecting with the guys. Cause I mean, who's left from the teams he played on? Like, I don't know. Hardly anybody in that locker room is somebody who played with Andrew Luck. Quentin for a year, Ryan Kelly for a couple, but that's about it. So I saw a man at peace with not just Indianapolis, but with football. And yeah, it ended really, really hard for kind of everybody involved. But it's always good to see a dude really, really at peace with everything that happened. And I'm honestly happy for him.
Yeah, I thought what really stood out to me, and you kind of hinted at it there, is, I mean, he really wants to stay in the game of football. Now, exactly what that looks like, I think will be interesting. But, you know, he made it clear, like, this game has given me so much, I want to give some back to it. And right now, he's doing a little bit of that at Palo Alto High out there and helping out. But, you know, some might look at it and be like, wow, he had such a jarring exit from the game, you'd think you'd be done with it. But again, he's made it very clear that whenever this next chapter of life, after kind of dad life right now, dominates it in some capacity, he wants to get back into football. And I just thought that was interesting because, again, the exit, and maybe the nature of the exit was obviously not what he wanted, but it was so just ugly and the timing of it. You know, maybe that is why I kind of feel that way. But he certainly seems very adamant that he's going to be in the game of football in some capacity.
Yeah, and I think it took some time. I think he had some really hard moments after it ended when he looked in the mirror and realized, like he said the other night, like, I can't be retired. I'm 30 years old. And this is not a guy that just, like, has been driven by money and is okay with just sitting on his money and chilling. Like, this guy needs to be challenged. And now that that wasn't going to come from the game of football, what is he going to do? And he had some troubles figuring that out. Like, what do you do? What do you pivot to after you've been one of the best in the world? I mean, football ran his life from sixth grade on, and he had other interests, but he loved football and poured himself into it. And all of a sudden, you don't have these 16-hour days at the facility. What are you going to do next? I think he had trouble with that. And it's great to see him come to peace with the game, because the game can be so unfair. And I've talked to a lot of players over the years, and you have as well, that, you know, it never really follows the script. And if there's ever a career that embodies that, that doesn't follow the script, it's Andrew Luck. And I think the fact that he can come to peace with that and then still want to be a part of the game, that was surprising to me when he first told me. But it's awesome. I mean, could you imagine him coaching high school quarterbacks? I mean, just one of the most talented guys you've ever seen on a football field. And you look at him now, and he looks like a literature teacher for a college.
I was gonna say, he does.
Like,
yeah.
You forget that dude was.
He's your library like sub for head. The day.
Yeah, I mean, and he's got the glasses, and he's like losing some hair on top, and it's like, you forget that dude was a bad dude on the football field, and he would take hits with the best of them.
Zach Kiefer with us from The Athletic. He's got the piece up on Reggie Miller, the trash talk story. Check it out there. Get that. Pay to get that Athletic subscription. It's always great stuff. We're talking some Luck in a little NFL with Zach as well. Last one on Luck. He and the Colts, Ring of Honor, bringing him back. What do you think in the next few years that relationship could be between the franchise, the city, and Andrew Luck? Any idea?
Well, it's one man's decision. It's not a committee. It's not a group of people. It's literally Jim Irsay's decision. I don't anticipate anything soon. I don't think the holdup is on the Colts end. I think they'd love to have Andrew back. I think his teammates, his coaches, Ballard, he's still close with Ballard. Irsay obviously loves him. They would love to have him back. I think for Andrew, it just needed to be time. He just needed some time. And I asked him this question last week. I said, you've kept such a low profile after all this ended. And by that, I mean avoiding us, people like us, right? The media, right? He did his big tell-all at ESPN. He sat down with me a couple times. He's done a couple TV things. But for the most part, he stayed out of the limelight. And he almost took offense to the question. He's like, I don't agree with that necessarily. And he said, I just don't chase the attention. And so I think that plays a role in this as well. He's not looking to be a guy that goes at midfield and waves to the crowd and kind of gets that attention. That's never been his personality. That's not what he's chasing. You know, I once wrote that he'd be the last player ever to join Instagram, and I still believe that. He just doesn't care about that stuff. And in a lot of ways, I admire that. But I do think it would be good for both sides. The Colts have moved on. Finally, they got a quarterback, and he's moved on. And I think to kind of button that up and sort of remedy the bad feelings that lingered after August 24th of 2019, especially the way he walked off the field. There were some boos. It wasn't a great scene. I think it'd be a nice gesture from the Colts to let him in. I think he's absolutely qualified. I mean, he was a stud. He was a reason that team in 12 went to the playoffs. I don't need to go down the list, but you got to put T.Y. Hilton in, and I think you got to put Andrew Luck in as well.
Zach, have I ever told you why I'm so jealous of you?
Well, it's certainly not my golf game.
You got a hole in one?
So let's go here. Zach is a tremendous writer. I've said this to him before. I think he's the most talented feature writer, frankly, I've come across. So, you know, you're jealous of that. Very accomplished runner by all accounts. I'm one that I'm like, as soon as I feel the first drop of sweat, I'm ready to go back inside. You know, Zach, very accomplished long distance runner as well. Zach's a good looking dude as well. But more than anything, Zach Kiefer, you covered how many Masters in your life?
One for one, KB.
Zach Kiefer covered one Masters in his life. And he won the media lottery to play Augusta National the Monday after what Masters, Zach? 2021, 2019? I don't even know.
Oh, KB, you know. It's the best Masters
was it Tigers?
You could ever pick to cover.
It was 2019?
Yeah.
Walk our audience through it. You win the lottery. I hate that my voice just naturally drops in disdain when I have to bring this up, but I'm beyond jealous. I saw people this week retelling their stories of getting to play Augusta National the Monday after the Masters. So for those unfamiliar with how it works, Zach, tell all, because I'm jealous and I actually do want to hear it again.
I could tell it now because it'll never happen again. I'll never get this lucky again in my life. It was a dream to just be at the course all week, right? I mean, I started every day by just walking all 18 holes by myself, no cell phones. It was just so amazing. So just covering the week was amazing. And then Tiger's kind of in the mix a little bit Thursday, Friday, Saturday. If you remember, they moved up the Sunday tee time, so they're teeing off at 9 a.m., so we get there at 6. And no one really thinks he's going to win it, but he's in there. And then everything unfolds on 12. He wins. I'm right there. I kind of see him run up to Charlie, and you kind of start to stop losing feeling in your body because you know you're seeing history right in front of you. But to pivot, you know, if they didn't get that round in before the storms that were coming, our round was going to get bumped the next day because the players were going to have to finish. So I'm praying in the back of my mind, please, please, please. So they have 32 spots. I get one of them. You pull into the Magnolia Lane, and there's a security guy, and he says, it says you can be here at 10:20. It's 10:18. Turn around. Come back in 2 minutes. So they don't mess around. You get to change in the champions' locker room. I had Seve's locker, which was like, are you kidding me? This is like an insult to Seve and all the champions in there. You get to go to the Augusta National Pro Shop, which is not the Masters Pro Shop, which is another element. But the story I always tell is I get up to the first tee box, and there's about 7 green jackets watching our shot.
Oh.
I'm as nervous as I've ever been in my life. I can play a little golf, but I shanked everything on the range because I was just too nervous. I was looking around. My mind was in a million places. And we get up to the tee, and all three players in my group just bomb it down the middle. I learned later that none of them are very good at golf, but they just hit great shots. I'm the last guy to go. I can barely feel my hands, and I tell myself, just hit the back of the ball. Like, just don't swing and miss, because I'm sure that's happened there. I got 7 green jackets eyeing me. Terrible swing, but I did hit it, thankfully. Pulled it left into the woods, made a double, and didn't really feel my hands until the fourth hole when I finally made a par. But shot 94, a lot of three putts. But an absolute dream. It was like being in a dream. I remember on 16, like leaving the green and being like, oh no, there's only 2 holes left. I want time to stop right now. So, I'll never ask for anything again in the rest of my life. I got to play Augusta the day after Tiger won what was probably his last Masters.
So 32, wow. You said 32 spots. Do you know how many media members are in that lottery?
Well, there's several hundred, but here's the thing. If you win the lottery, you can't play the course for 7 years.
Ooh.
So that helped my chances immensely because I'm obviously showing up blind. Right?
Yeah.
Well, so hell. Everybody that I knew like had already played it, and they weren't in the lottery. So, man, I got lucky, but I'm glad I brought my clubs.
I need a credential. I need a credential so bad. So jealous. Unbelievably. Zach Kiefer from The Athletic, his latest, an outstanding read per usual. The stories behind Reggie Miller, the skinny little twig who became one of the best trash talkers ever. How did this idea happen? Zach shared that with us, and you can read more up on The Athletic. Zach, great work with that piece. Tremendous execution, as always, and let's get out on the course later this summer.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Andy, it's kind of weird when you cover a franchise that hasn't won a playoff series in 10 years, hasn't won a playoff game in 6 years. I am sitting here like, man, the optimism level in this market is high right now.
Boy,
for the
really,
Pacers.
It really is. We might look silly here coming up in a couple weeks.
This is a little scary. And then I'm thinking, what's the optimism level in Milwaukee? And I guess to get more of a pulse on that, we go to the Payless Liquors hotline. Justin Garcia, a Bucks radio network analyst. You find him on Locked On Bucks. Obviously, we know Tony East quite well from the Locked On network. Justin, let's go there, and thank you for the time here on this Friday morning. Overall level of optimism for the Bucks to get out of round one, which just saying that sounds weird. Where is that right now in your neck of the woods?
Well, among fans, and thanks for having me on, guys, it is the lowest it has been in the last 6 years when this team really became formidable. Obviously the Giannis injury is a big part of that, but it's been such a Jekyll and Hyde Bucks group that we've seen all season long. For as many data points as there are to suggest, hey, this team is really the team that could challenge the Celtics the most in the East. You could point to just as many that suggest this team's lucky to be in the playoffs and is a likely first round exit. So I don't know. I think it's really, it seems like it's 50-50 among fans because they know the uncertainty of Giannis, and it just depends on what version of this team we see.
Now, we know the fans, and Justin Garcia with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline, radio analyst there for the Bucks. We know, telling us how the fans feel. How do you think the franchise feels? If the Pacers win this series, whether it be a sweep or five games, even six games, if the Pacers win this series, is it going to be, two options? Number one, we as the Bucks need to make big changes. Maybe the Dame Lillard thing isn't working out. Got to get a new coaching staff. Or is it, listen, guys, we had injuries. It was unfortunate we made the coaching move. Let's get some stability there. And Giannis is hurt. Do you expect us to beat another playoff team with Giannis not being in there? Which do you think it would be if the Pacers do win this series?
Well, I can all but guarantee it won't be coaching related. I mean, this team is already paying, as it stands, three head coaches. So I don't think there's going to be any shifts there. And Doc Rivers already started to bring in some of his guys in Dave Yeager and Rex Kalamian. The rest of it, I think, depends on how they look and what we see from Giannis. Because, if Giannis plays most or some of this series and you still lose, you could point to that injury as being a big reason why, but unfortunately for the Bucks, that would then be three straight seasons where an injury at least played some role in your early exit from the postseason. The Chris Middleton won the biggest one the year they were defending the title. And last year, Giannis goes down in game one against the Heat. He didn't miss the duration of the series. He didn't look himself. It's also not the reason why the Bucks lost that series. So I think it does kind of hinge on that in how much of Giannis did we get? What did he look like in that series? But, the tricky part is, I think you're kind of getting to, I don't know what the options are. It's really either say, okay, we're going to keep going with this. We think injuries 3 years in a row were what derailed us, and we get a full offseason under Doc. We think that chemistry between Dame and Giannis is going to get even better in the offseason. Or you just say, look, we tried for 6 years. This isn't working, but we're up against it with our current cap situation and being in the second apron. There's not much we can do other than kind of start over.
On Twitter, it's at Justin Garcia, NBA, Bucks Radio Network analyst. He's with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Justin, I want to go back to your first answer when you were talking about just the lower level of optimism, or I think you said something to the effect of the lowest you've seen in the last 6 years heading into this first-round series. How much of that is Pacers related? Like, is there some like, hey, they beat us 4 out of 5. And again, I fully acknowledge that's 3.5 months ago and about a million things have changed for both teams since then.
Well, I don't think it's as much now. The funny part is, back in February and January, there was a lot of that of, man, if they don't get this right, they're going to get the Pacers in the first round. And there was a lot of fear over that team because not only winning 4 out of 5, but how they did it and how these two teams looked in that matchup. I do think that's calmed down a bit just because they're very different teams, as you guys are aware. I mean, the Bucks can point to a different coaching staff and a much better defensive philosophy to handle that Pacers team. The Pacers can point to Pascal Siakam didn't play in any of those five games. So it's two very different teams. But I think a lot of it is just, you don't know which version of this team you're going to see and what version you're going to get consistently. The low point of the season for the Bucks was a 4-game losing streak, 10 days, 2 weeks ago. And those are bad teams. It was the Memphis Grizzlies, the Raptors, the Wizards, and then the Knicks. But preceding that 4-game skid, the Bucks obliterated the Oklahoma City Thunder in convincing fashion. And that's what this season has been like. They have the third best win percentage in the league against the top 10 teams in net rating. Their 5-man lineup with Giannis and Dame and Chris and Brooke Lopez and Malik Beasley is the best of any 5-man lineup in the league. Their numbers with Giannis and Chris and Dame on the floor have been in the 99th percentile. They just haven't had it consistently in the second half. But again, you get all that on the other end of the spectrum. The Bucks have been one of the worst teams in the league against those mediocre teams. They've struggled with slowing teams down. They've been a good rebounding team and a bad rebounding team. Defense has gotten better, but it's still around middle of the pack. So I think a lot of it is you just don't know which version of this team you're going to get.
His name's Justin Garcia. He joins us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline, radio analyst there for the Bucks. Of course, Sunday night, it gets going, Pacers and Bucks. You can hear it on the Pacers side right here on The Fan. Damian Lillard did not practice on Tuesday or Wednesday. Justin, we know he's got the groin injury and abductor injury as well. What's the latest on Dame Lillard?
Well, I mean, it sounds as though he hasn't practiced, but we're giving him some time off this week. He's still going through some film things and everything else. I would assume Damian Lillard is going to play. What version of Damian Lillard are you going to get? That's what's up for debate. And I think, look, even the absence of Giannis, we assume Giannis is not going to play in game one. The absence of that is going to make it even more interesting for Damian Lillard because it puts a lot of pressure on Dame. He's had some big moments for the Bucks throughout this season, but as I mentioned, it's been a work in progress. You know, the big shift is Dame was Giannis in Portland, and now he's coming to a team that already has that guy. He's had to try to figure out, where's my spots? Where do I fit in? He has been at his best in games that Giannis has been out, and he's averaged just about 33 points per game in those matchups. He's been much more efficient. So I think Bucks fans would point to that, but going up against the Rick Carlisle defense and you look at the personnel for the Bucks, I would assume the Pacers' game plan is anybody but Dame can beat us. So that's going to be the challenge for Doc Rivers.
Justin Garcia, again, Bucks radio network analyst with the Sear Payless Liquors Hotline. Justin, last one for me. Tyrese Halliburton has been very up and down, at times flat out down, since the injury, which again is post the five meetings with the Bucks this season. And so that's a question mark we certainly have talked about here in Indy. Would you assume Patrick Beverley gets that assignment?
Oh, yeah. That was one of the bigger problems that the Bucks had is they just were not equipped to defend on the perimeter. Malik Beasley was the guy tasked with that. He's been demoted from the starting lineup. He may be an X factor for the Bucks in terms of his scoring off the bench, but Pat Beverley is really the only guy equipped to stay with Tyrese Halliburton. And I think another potential X factor to keep an eye on in this series for the Bucks, not that he's going to play a lot of minutes, but is rookie Andre Jackson Jr. He is probably their second best perimeter defender. Doc loves the energy that he brings, fouls, and just a rookie in the playoffs. Those are the things to keep an eye on. But he brings those intangibles defensively. And I do wonder if this series is a Pat Beverley defense Tyrese Halliburton, and we're also going to find some spots for Andre Jackson Jr. Maybe it's 5 or 6 minutes a game, but he gives Pat Beverley a rest and we put him on it.
He was great at UConn. I mean, I think everyone remembers him.
Yeah.
During that national title run.
Justin Garcia, radio analyst. Last one for me here as we get to the top here on this Friday. Boy, it seems like there's a little bit of hedging maybe with Giannis. Well, he might miss the beginning of the series, or maybe it's a 3 or 4 week injury, and then you throw in the whole conversation of it's a calf injury. You don't want to bring him back and then have a major, major injury. We saw that a couple years ago with Kevin Durant. I guess just all the Giannis stuff. What is the conversation there about long-term Giannis bringing him back in this series, when he'll play, if he'll play in this series against the Pacers? What is that conversation like there in Milwaukee?
That's the interesting part is you recognize your window is closing and you don't, as this roster is constructed, you don't have many more opportunities where you know we are in position to win. I think the Bucks, this group that they have, I'm not saying they would beat them. I think they are set up to play the Celtics better than they've been in the past 3 seasons. The difference is you don't have as much confidence they're going to get that far as you did in seasons past. So I think they would point to that. But as you mentioned, what if he re-aggravates? And I think the thing that makes you even more cautious is it's not just the calf. As Bucks fans are aware, it's been all throughout the season that we've seen Giannis with left leg issues, Achilles tendonitis, hamstring issues, all in that same leg that has caused him to miss games throughout this season. So there does have to be some caution there of what if we rush him back or just bring him back and something happens, similar to the Kevin Durant, hopefully not that severe, but what that would mean for this season when you're entering next season with Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez and walk years, you're already the oldest team in the league. So would that force your hand in what you do with this franchise? I don't think it's as simple as, well, Giannis is going to sit game one, and if the Bucks win, he'll sit game two. If they lose, he'll play game two. Everything we've heard is this is a 2 to 4 week injury, basically. I know Giannis is an incredible healer. I did not think we would see him again after game four of the Eastern Conference Finals, and he dominated in the finals. But you can't rely on that every single time. And I think that's where most Bucks fans kind of are, is, look, Giannis always heals fast. He'll be back. I think you have to approach this series with the mindset that Giannis is not going to play. So how do we beat the Pacers without Giannis? If we get him back at any point, great. But we don't think we're going to have him in this series.
Great stuff right there from Justin Garcia. Again, Bucks Radio Network analyst, Locked On Bucks, and on Twitter, at Justin Garcia NBA. Justin, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Anytime, guys.
That is Justin Garcia right there. We bring up the Patrick Beverley Haliburton assignment. Haliburton has owned Beverley, if you look at the history. We're talking routine, 20, 30-point games, huge assist numbers for what it's worth. So I do think that is something certainly to keep an eye on in this matchup. And the Andre Jackson thing is interesting. Remember, when Haliburton has struggled, oftentimes it's been the 6'7", 6'8", even 6'9", long defender. Jackson really isn't that, and Beverley definitely isn't that. So I think that's some good news.
No, I think it is, and I think you see the worry there from someone with the Bucks of long-term and short-term, nobody has any confidence. And you're right, Pat Beverley is a much smaller guy. It's the long teams like in Orlando or someone like that that has given Haliburton and these Pacer teams a real problem.
Pacers in six.
Pacers in five. Mark, you
Pacers
got something?
In six.
Pacers in six.